Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Now, my special guest this evening, as a child, was told that she was a failure. The girl going nowhere. She had a juvenile delinquent badge slapped on her when she was just 13 by a psychiatrist. Being labelled at an early age came with a lot of difficulties, as you can imagine, leading to most people believing she would be dead or in prison by the time she was 20. Although for many, the resultant mental trauma from child sexual abuse is prison enough for her. And she joins me on the line right now, Emma Jane Taylor. Lovely to talk to you. Good evening, Emma Jane.
Good evening, Gareth. Great to talk to you too. Thank you for having me on your show tonight.
Can you take us right back to the beginning, Emma Jane, and tell us about your story during those much younger years?
Yeah, I mean, if I roll back to early 1980s, I was around 9 years old. I was sexually abused for the first time by a restaurant owner who had befriended a family, my family, on a holiday. I had no idea what had happened to me that night, actually. I just remember feeling very scared. I felt just frozen to the spot, actually. I never shared that story. I just continued on into my life. And over the next couple of years, I was living with my mum and my stepfather and my brothers. And from time to time, my step-siblings would visit. Every other weekend, I would see my biological father. He was someone who I just thoroughly enjoyed seeing every other weekend. Life was kind of good, you know, it was happy. I didn't feel like I was at that point in my life stressed, unhappy, or concerned about anything. I was just like most 11-year-olds. And then around 1984, I was around 11, 12 years old, my father told me he couldn't see me again. So this had a huge impact on me. Absolutely shattered my world, actually. I'd gone from enjoying a very stable surrounding with my father, my mum, my stepfather, and then suddenly that was all gone, and I started to really struggle with life. I was fearful. I was living in a sea of darkness. I was a nervous wreck. I had a huge abandonment issues. I was terrified of being rejected. And just year on, I was hoping that he might come back, give me a birthday card, give me a Christmas card, and he never did. And, you know, I think what happened to me at nine, what happened to me by my father, suddenly it was like this sort of clashing. And I went off the rails, actually. I went off the rails. I was deeply insecure, very vulnerable, had low self-esteem, desperate to be loved, desperate to be needed. I began to have flashbacks of that moment when I was 9 years old. I started to feel really dirty. I remembered details. It was starting to scare me, but I didn't know how to talk about it, so I just kept going. I felt a little bit ashamed. I was quite confused, actually. I was confused by rejection and abandonment. And became addicted to cleanliness, so always having baths. I just felt dirty. And then out of nowhere, a friend of the family came along, and it became almost like a father figure, I guess. Saw maybe a weakness and a gap, knew my family, and he then groomed and sexually abused me for the next 3 to 4 years. And I think, you know, being degraded, tortured, raped and manipulated throughout those years, on top of what happened to me by my father and what had happened at 9 years old, just completely took its toll on me. I was already quite nervous anyway because of what my father had done, and you know, and suddenly it was escalated, it was magnified, and I felt just heavily drained every day. My schooling suffered. I became addicted to painkillers. I drank heavily. I smoked. I took drugs. I took laxatives. I became bulimic. I was totally lost. I'd listen to Cliff Richard's Daddy's Home every night, hoping he would come back. I was watched Cilla Black on Surprise, Surprise, wishing my dad would come back and rescue me, but he never did. And, you know, I think when you look back on that, those years, I'd completely gone off the rails. But because of what had happened to my father, everyone assumed it was that, and therefore what was happening by the abuser went unnoticed.
And the second abuser, how old were you when that abuse started?
I was around, I think, 12 when it started, the conversation started, and it probably around 13 when it all physically started to, the physical abuse started to happen.
So there was that window where after the initial abuse, when you were 9 years of age, was it the presence of your dad that helped you keep it together?
Do you know what? I think about this often, Gareth, and when you're 9 years old, you don't really have, you're not developed mentally, emotionally, physically. And as I've gone on in my life, I've talked to lots of people who were abused as a child around, maybe even younger, maybe it was just a one-off. And maybe they don't think it's significant enough to talk to, therefore they don't, because they don't feel their case is as bad as someone else's case. Well, no, I look back now, and just once is too many times. Yeah. And I think when I look back at that incident now, would I, if my dad hadn't left and I hadn't been groomed, would I ever be here as a campaigner? Probably not. And I say that just because I met so many people who have just carried on with their life as if nothing has happened. But of course, it keeps coming back and biting and biting and biting. I think when you have the security of so many good people around you, you probably don't notice so much the trauma around you. And I guess when my father left, my eyes were wide open, everything sort of stripped around me, and I felt like sort of just quite exposed. And like I say, then it all the memories started coming back, because, you know, a lot of trauma takes a lot of years to come resurface anyway. I didn't really understand what had happened to me till my late teens, early 20s, and it wasn't until mid-20s, late 20s, that I started to do something about it. And never for one minute did I think I'd be a campaigner. I just wanted to always feel better in life, you know, feel a bit more confident, feel like I wasn't living a lie. So I think in answer to your question, I think, you know, having the security of significant people like your father and your parents around you helps you to stay on track. And the fact that wasn't the case, and clearly just, you know, opened doors to, you know, to this trauma that then unfolded.
And I think, and I don't know whether you'll agree with me, but a lot of sexual abuse happens at an age in a child's life when the child is looking for a good role model. And I'm just wondering, was your dad that good role model that you looked up to and that you felt, well, once I have his support, what happened to me, I can almost deal with? And then he was gone. And as you said, the lid was off and that was it.
Yeah. And I think, but also I think between 9 and 11, I think my memory must have just dropped out a lot, because I don't really remember ever really thinking too much around about it. Because I was just 9, 10, 11. I was so little. I just knew something didn't feel right, and what had happened that night didn't fit the life that I was living. And up until when my father sort of told me he didn't want to see me again, he was my pretty much my everything. I mean, you know, as my family were, you know, I didn't feel threatened, unsteady or unnerved by any of them, because I was just felt very comfortable in that environment. So I guess I think it's hard to answer, actually, because from 9, 10, 11, certainly I'm only speaking for myself here. I'm sure others might feel differently, but I don't remember feeling like I was the, I don't remember feeling like it was what it, I don't remember thinking it was wrong, but I don't remember thinking it was right. It was only into my late teens when I was like, oh God, that was, should never have happened.
Yeah.
And would I have known that at nine? No. With many children, maybe some now because life's advanced so much, but certainly when you think I was a 1970s baby, we just didn't know all those things, you know?
Mm. Now, I think it's 6 years ago when you wrote Don't Hold Back, which it is a fantastic encouragement and a prompt to those who have been through what you went through to find their own voice, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I like I say, I mean, I didn't ever sort of think, oh, I'm going to one day be a campaigner, write a book and get on the radio and speak to you, Gareth. I literally thought, I feel like I need to share my story. I felt like I was an imposter. I was living in this world where no one really knew who I was, what I'd gone through. I was seen as a successful woman, but I didn't measure my success through monetary or business. It was really, my success was the fact I was still alive. I was still capable, and I wasn't that failure that everyone suggested I might be when I was a child. And I decided to sort of put down into paper how I got through all those difficulties, and it became a motivational toolbook. I had to share my story in the book, which was actually quite gut-wrenching because that was the first time I'd ever put it out on paper. And I think I'd written it about 20 times over 2 years and deleted it every time. And then one day I was talking to an author, Simon Koenig, and he's like, EJ, you know, if you're going to put a book out there, you need to put your story in it. And I said, well, I don't know. So I think I sort of touched on, my name's Emma Jane Taylor, I've gone through some trauma. He's like, well, that's just not going to cut any ice. You need to get your story out there.
Yeah.
Because that will give the credibility to why you've written this book. So my book went out. I think I nearly threw up a few times when I was writing it and putting it out there. It's just that release of, you're regurgitating so much and it's coming out and it's coming out. And suddenly in 2018, it was out there. And I thought I'll get my book out there. If it was to give someone some hope, I feel like it's done the right thing, which is all I ever wanted. And I didn't have any thought beyond that where I would go, just that I knew that I wanted to get this book out and that felt like the right thing to have done at that time.
But I think when you write a book like that, I suppose the difference between verbally telling your story to an audience or even to a television audience and then sitting alone in your room late into the night writing down very specific details where you have to find the words to describe the awfulness of what you've experienced, it takes you to a place you never really thought you could go to. And perhaps, is that the healing?
I think it's definitely part of the healing. I was 13 when I was sent to a juvenile delinquent. Well, I was sent to a psychiatrist because I was labelled a juvenile delinquent. That was really, I think, just to try and keep me in school. And then I went into therapy sort of myself, mid-20s, stayed in therapy for a good sort of 10, 15 years. And since then, I've been advancing with sort of different kind of techniques because I think you're always trying to move forward. Everybody should try and do some kind of healing and some kind of therapy. And so you write this book and, you know, it was in a right place to write the book when I wrote it. However, you're right. You're bringing up conversations that you're starting to really swirl around yourself publicly, and that is scary. And I always say to everybody, you have to be in the right place with the right support around you before you go public with anything like this, because it can cripple your world if you don't have support around you. And I have a lot of support, and I had a lot of support, and it felt like the right thing. But as memories were coming back, and I was, like you say, putting words on that piece of paper and seeing that, well, I couldn't see because there was, I felt like I was crying so much for days and days and days as I was putting it in. And, you know, it feels a bit, you know, self-indulgent really, but you are kind of just letting everything out of you. And actually, is that part of the process? I think it absolutely is. Yeah. What it was for me, and I'm only speaking in my opinion here because I don't want to, people have to do what's right for them, but it just felt like if I was going to push forward, I had to just let this out of me. And it became a real healing through that, although at the beginning I did sort of think, what am I doing?
Yeah, because
it's quite nerve-wracking.
I think when you live so much of your life as a result of abuse, you live in the dark, that when it all becomes public, the spotlight can be too bright.
Yeah.
And it's a very threatening thing to someone who goes from one extreme to the other. Emma Jane, will you stay on the line, please? I'm really enjoying this conversation with you, and I want to talk to you in a moment about the Not My Shame campaign.
Okay.
It's important that we do talk about that. I just want to take a quick break. So stay right where you are. If you'd like to join in the conversation tonight, it's 087 188 0008. Back in a moment.
Nighttime Talk. Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Previously on Colm and Lucy in the Morning.
How can we have wisdom teeth that we don't ever need or use?
I don't have any wisdom teeth. They haven't come down.
No, they're there. That can't happen.
Excuse me. They're in my gum, Hazy. Even
what
though
are you,
I'm 48.
Nine?
What are you shaking your head for? Making me out like to be like some sort of creepy little alien.
Does it make sense? So you say you have wisdom teeth, but they just haven't come down.
Yes.
So are they there? Up there in your gum? So
if I don't know. I don't even know if you're sober. Like, what are you talking about?
Colm and Lucy in the Morning. Weekdays from 6 a.m.
with Noyx Newmans. For your kitchens, floors, decks and doors.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Ooh, that's Shedly. Here at Shed Direct Ireland, we'll get you set up for 2024 with a brand new garden shed. We've steel, wooden, heavy duty, premium and budget sheds here. From the tiny shed to the colossus shed. We've got a size for any garden or balcony. Available for collection in store or delivered nationwide. And all are here to see in our showroom in Finglas. Find us on the Jamestown Road, speak to our staff, get a shedjacation, and get yourself a new shed. ShedsDirectIreland.com. We're bleeding Shedly.
Hi, Al here from Lewis Motors. If you're looking for your next car that's a cut above the rest, then we've got you covered. At Lewis Motors, we source only the finest high-end performance and luxury vehicles before testing, checking and prepping to the highest standards, so you can be as proud of your new motor as we are. Head to lewismotors.ie to browse the full range or drop into us at our Cavantini showroom and discover why so many people trust Lewis Motors time and time again. Lewis Motors, we love our cars.
Listening to Nighttime Talk
with recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Nighttime Talk here. It's Gareth O'Callaghan tonight with you. And back tomorrow night and indeed Thursday night as well. I hope you enjoyed the show so far tonight. Still a little bit of time to go, but just to let you know that I will be here tomorrow night at 9. Emma Jane Taylor is my guest tonight, and we're talking, I suppose, about a lifetime that has been both like shocking but transformative, in the sense that you've now come so far with things that you never ever thought you could even have imagined doing. Isn't that the case?
100%. And I don't regret that. I know it feels like the right place for me to be right now, here at the front of the campaign, at the front of the charity. But I just want to go back to something I said earlier, and I think it's really important for me to say I didn't achieve what I have without a lot of therapy and support. I really don't advise anyone to speak up or share anything about their personal story in public until they have a greater understanding of themselves and what they're facing. Mm-hmm. And I really want people to consider that before doing anything that could potentially cripple their world. And I've seen that 1,000 times. I'm not here. I didn't intend to be here, but having done a lot of support, having had a lot of support, I feel like it's the right place for me now. But I'm human as well, and you know, there are days where I do need to step back and and listen to myself and indulge in the in my life the way I need to without it being too overwhelming. So I have stepped forward. I feel like it's the right thing for me, and of course fronting the campaign and the charity is a really important part of this journey now.
Let's talk about, and I'm fully behind you in what you say there. I think it takes a lot of strength and strengthening, and I suppose re-examining who you were, who you have become since what happened to you, and where you plan to go from here. And where that took you was to the charity that you set up last year, which was the Not My Shame campaign.
So it's two things. We've got the Project 9010, which is the charity I launched, and that's about to do its first year anniversary launch, and that's about raising awareness, educating young people, and safeguarding children. That's all about protection. But the campaign was a bit of an accident, actually, and I spoke to Niall almost a year ago, actually, about this. I'd put on a T-shirt because I'd been swirling around this conversation of child sexual abuse and being a campaigner, and I really sort of felt like if I was to step up, if I am to step up, I really sort of need to feel this and understand it a bit more. So I'd been swirling around a conversation, Not My Shame, and then I kind of put it on a quote, and I said, I'm not afraid to say I was sexually abused as a child. I was just a child. It isn't my shame. I put that on a T-shirt and put it onto social media. It went viral, and and here we are. You know, I was surrounded by survivors of child sexual abuse very quickly. One of the first survivors to step forward was Lynn. She came forward. She said, "EJ, I want to stand with you." She put the T-shirt on. Lynn Cole, she stood with me, and then it sort of spiraled from there. Really, survivors really felt that it was an important part of their voice as well, because it isn't their shame. You know, why should we be here holding this shame? And I really wanted to turn that conversation around, turn the tables around, to help people understand that the shame of child sexual abuse is not the victims, it is the perpetrators. And we need to change this around, get that headspace clearer of this conversation, to ensure that we can support those who've suffered, because they shouldn't be spending their life suffering for someone else's behaviour. And that's really how it all started, Gareth. And, you know, the campaign sort of grew and grew and grew. It went all around the world. And it's had some great support. We've now got a campaign running. We're about to do our first year anniversary, which is next Wednesday.
First of May.
And 1st of May. There's going to be lots of things happening. And we're supported by Charlie Lawson. We're supported by Nadia Jamil. We're supported by Welsh actor Sarah Craftcroft. We've had support from Neville Southall. I bumped into Michael Parkinson's at an event, you know, shortly before he died, and he was supportive of the campaign and what I was doing, as was John Altman. And and I had a picture taken with Ross Kemp with my T-shirt on. I always ask if they're okay to have their picture taken with me with the T-shirt, because not everybody's comfortable with this conversation. I've spoken to Stuart Anthony. We've had Matt Hoy. We've had so many people, like celebrities, and that's really important for the campaign, because that's what get the messages. That's what gets the messages out more and more and more. You know, and it's hard. This conversation's hard. I sometimes feel like we're under an umbrella of power that we can't ever find that gap to get through to make a difference. But we're making a difference. We've got over 500 members in a private space now, which is supportive, survivors only. The campaign is, everybody's getting involved. We've got Rock Drop Days. We've got Coffee Mornings run by Sharon Gray. I have an amazing team, Joe Heath, Lynn Cole, Sharon, and everybody behind the scenes doing so many brilliant things. Chris Olsen in America has been running the Rock Drop Day. Yeah, and it's everywhere now. It's Australia, New Zealand, Dubai, America, Kenya, Pakistan, Germany, South Africa, Canada. It's all over Bangkok and Thailand last week. So it's everywhere.
I'm not surprised.
Because we know this happens everywhere.
It does, but you almost sound surprised by the success of this. And I think what you've done, Emma Jane, and it's very important that you remember this, is that you've lit a spark that maybe others who you offer so much support to that you'll never, ever know about in your lifetime will be grateful that you did it, that they just didn't have the strength you had at the time when you did it. And they will in their own time as well. And I sometimes think that's something someone like you who spearheads this incredible movement needs to be reminded of.
I'm glad to be here and connecting with so many people and so many wonderful people. I feel quite emotional, actually. They all know I'm quite emotional when I connect with survivors, because ultimately I can't do this on my own.
Yeah.
And so the movement has grown. The people are getting stronger and braver. As it gets bigger, I'm happy to be here supporting and doing everything I can to help this move forward. But ultimately, we need more and more people to come forward, because that's what's going to make the difference longer term. And it's a big problem. It's a big conversation, and it's a hard nut to crack when you want to get into the really reeds of this, into the political world, and to make a difference that we need to see everywhere around the world.
Yes. I completely agree with you, because I look back at my own past and I see those dark places as well. Just for those of us who would like to continue to find out more about what's happening next Wednesday, or should I say tomorrow week, the 1st of May, where do we go, Emma Jane?
So if you go to the website, www.notmyshame.global, that's notmyshame.global, if you go there, you can find the private space for the Facebook group. You can find where to buy ribbons and key rings, and if you want T-shirts. It's not all about merchandise, but if you want to, they're there. If not, just use the hashtag notmyshame. All of our social media tags are at NotMyShameUK. You find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. And I think sort of a really good place to start is just to go to the website, and then you can find all the contact details and relevant information for any of the groups that we're running that you'd like to be involved in. Our private Facebook group has about 15 different chat rooms, so people are chatting all the time, and you know what, supporting each other, and that's the most beautiful thing, is the support. And we're also getting allies coming in. We need allies, because those of us who've gone through this horrendous trauma as children understand. Allies don't really. They might listen, but then they'll be on with their day doing something else, whereas the survivor will be really like, yeah, I get that. I understand that. I want to help because, but we need allies to go, actually, yes, I want to make sure my children and the future generations are protected. Because if we start first there, if we start with children, protect children, I absolutely feel strongly that we can guarantee a safer world in, so, I mean, there's so many lateral strands of conversation there that I could go down, but the world would be in a better place, because abused children who don't get the support and necessary guidance to help them in their life don't flourish where they should. And we don't have a flourishing society. We are not ever going to positively grow.
Yeah. Great words and beautifully spoken. And thank you so much, Emma Jane, for taking the time to talk to us at this very late time of the night. And I hope you have a restful night. And thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Gareth, and good luck with everything you're doing there.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.